Hello and welcome to Spectrum Iran. In tonight's show, we shall be focusing on the recent U.S. sanctions against Iran, particularly the one targeting Islamic Republic of Iran Broadcasting, the IRIB. Stay with us. Well, the United States stepped up pressure on Iran on Thursday, December 13th, over its nuclear program, imposing sanctions on 7 companies and 5 individuals, including Iran's Atomic Energy Agency chief. The U.S. Treasury Department said the action would bar those companies and individuals from doing business with U.S. firms or citizens and freeze any assets they have in the U.S. Among those sanctioned is Fereydoon Abbasi, head of Iran's Atomic Energy Organization, and a survivor of a terrorist assassination attempt that Iran blames on the Zionist regime. At least 4 Iranian nuclear scientists have been martyred since 2010. Dr. Fereydoon Abbasi was wounded in one of those terrorist attacks. Foreign banks that handle transactions for the companies and individuals listed by the U.S. Treasury could also lose their access to U.S. banking system under the new U.S. sanctions regime. These sanctions are in addition to those imposed nearly 2 weeks earlier, in which Islamic Republic of Iran Broadcasting, the IRIB, was also blacklisted. Tonight we have invited 2 experts to help us discuss in more detail U.S. sanctions and their effectiveness. In the studio we have the pleasure of being joined by Dr. Fuad Izzadi, Professor of Political Communications at University of Tehran. Dr. Izzadi, thank you for taking part in our program, sir.
Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. And we'll shortly be joined via satellite in Boston by Professor Carl Afros, CRB, author, political expert and scientist. But before we discuss, get into our discussion proper, let's take a listen to our introduction. Stay with us. The U.S. has imposed new sanctions against the Islamic Republic of Iran. The new sanctions, among other economic features, also blacklist the Islamic Republic of Iran Broadcasting, the IRIB, and its president, block all the IRIB assets, and prevent others from doing business with it. The sanction targeting the IRIB is another attempt by the West to silence Iranian media. In a flagrant violation of the freedom of speech, 2 satellite providers, Eutelsat SA and Intelsat SA, stopped the broadcast of several Iranian satellite channels in October, citing pressure by the European Union. In November, the Hong Kong-based Asia Satellite Telecommunications Company Limited, AsiaSat, also took all Iranian channels off-air in East Asia under pressure from the U.S. The
new sanctions also target transactions for goods and services with Iran's energy, oil, port, shipping and shipbuilding sectors. They will also target trade with Iran in graphite and precious metals. The US lawmakers say the fresh move is part of measures aimed at pressuring Iran to halt its nuclear energy program. The US, Zionist regime, and some of their allies accuse Iran of pursuing non-civilian objectives in its nuclear energy program. Iran categorically rejects the allegations and argues that as a signatory to the NPT and a member of the International Atomic Energy Agency, it is fully entitled to develop and acquire nuclear technology for peaceful purposes, and cites IAEA's reports of non-diversion as proof of its peaceful program.
Welcome back to Spectrum Iran. Professor Izadi, before I put the first question to you, let me welcome Professor Karl Afro Siabi in Boston. Karl Afro Siabi, thank you for your participation, sir.
My pleasure.
Thank you. Dr. Izadi, what are the basis for the new rounds of U.S. sanctions against Iran going through the U.S. Senate?
Since the U.S. is passing this type of laws every few weeks, talking about bases is really not very proper, I think. They really don't have any bases. They have started on a path of increasing pressure on Iran, and because of the tendency inside the Congress to basically put Iran in a corner and, you know, what they call exercise punitive sanctions, they basically continue increasing different levels of sanctions against Iran without any justification. Iran's policies have not changed. They know what they need to do to basically come into some sort of agreement with Iran. They are not willing to do that, but they are willing to pass new sanctions against Iran every few weeks.
Thank you. Professor Karl Afro Siabi, political expert, scientist, author, sir. What's your take on the recent set of anti-Iran sanctions in view of the fact that Iran and the IAEA a few days ago held talks in Tehran, after which both sides expressed satisfaction and said progress had been made, sir?
Well, the timing of it is very curious because it coincided with the IAEA meeting in Tehran, and that raises the question of what is the U.S.'s real intention? You know, are they trying to torpedo the process, or are they trying to show good faith? And obviously, this is a very good example of the opposite, namely bad faith on U.S.'s part, and it sends the wrong message about the second Obama administration's intentions toward Iran and the plans for future multilateral talks with Iran. With respect to the legality of these U.S. unilateral sanctions, in my opinion and the opinion of many legal experts in the U.S. and Europe, these unilateral sanctions by U.S. and Europe are in fact illegal, because they extend beyond the mandate of the UN sanction resolutions, which set specific restrictions on various issues, asset freeze, name of companies, individuals, and so on and so forth. And these UN resolutions have been invoked by triggering Chapter 7, with respect to international security and threat to peace. And many legal experts are of the opinion that once Chapter 7 is triggered, that prohibits individual action by member states because they're obligated to follow the lead of the UN Security Council. So that's a very major issue in terms of the illegality of the unilateral sanctions by US, Europe, Canada, and so on. And I think that as time goes on, this will become more pronounced and prominent and undermines the legitimacy of the US and European sanctions.
Thank you, Professor Afrasiabi. Dr. Izadi, some commentators are of the view that jamming Iranian satellites and then having them taken off and now blacklisting IRIB, it's all about protecting the Western media monopoly. In a sense, an act of war against alternative voices, alternative media. What's your take on that?
Well, what is happening is that when people, fair-minded people in other parts of the world, whether it's in the US, in Europe, in Asia, Africa, wherever, when they look at the case that the Western governments present against Iran, and they look at the response that Iran has toward those accusations, they realize that they don't. The Western governments don't have any basis to put their arguments against Iran. Governments that have nuclear weapons and are not getting rid of their nuclear weapons as it's mandated by NPT, are pressuring Iran and accusing Iran of doing things that they cannot prove.
Exactly.
Iran, everybody says, everybody knows, does not have nuclear weapons, and they have not shown any evidence of any diversion of the material that, enriched material that Iran has. They don't have any proof, basically, to back up their accusations against Iran. And if a country that was not nuclear armed would say these things against Iran, at least we could say that they don't have nuclear weapons and they don't want...
certain concerns and worries.
Right, and they don't want other countries to have nuclear weapons. These countries do have nuclear weapons and they don't have any evidence that that Iran is pursuing a nuclear weapon program. So any fair-minded person would look at this and realize that they are using the nuclear issue as an excuse to basically pressure Iran both politically, economically. They really don't like the government that took over here 30-some years ago. The previous government, the Shah's government, was very much in line with Western government's interests. So they realize all these things. And public opinion matters in the world that we live in. And as the world moves toward democracy, and we have seen this with the Islamic awakening in the last couple of years, as we see that people's opinion, public opinion, matters more, we realize the importance of media to address this opinion. 2 years ago, 3 years ago, public opinion in Egypt did not really matter because they had a dictator called Hosni Mubarak, and he would basically decide what to do, and he would care less about what the people thought. Now we have a situation where people go and vote and are, you know, their opinion is important. So given the current situation, given the fact that public opinion matters, given the fact that public opinion in these Western countries matter, the Western governments have decided to go back on all the rhetoric they had about freedom of speech, freedom of the press, and basically act like despots and basically do things that they normally are not supposed to do, which is silence the alternative voices. And that's exactly what they have been trying to do. And as you know, Iranian media outlets that broadcast internationally are not the best in terms of their reach. And the Western governments even did not want to tolerate the media that wasn't as big as theirs.
That's right, and, in terms of size.
And this is a sign that they're actually afraid of public opinion. They're afraid that their people, people in other countries, realize more what they are doing, and that worries them very much.
Thank you, Dr. Izzadi. Carl Afrasiab in Boston, sir. The U.S. Treasury says the newly announced sanctions are aimed at targeting the international procurement operations of Atomic Energy Organization of Iran, Iran Centrifuge Agency, technology company, and the Uranium Enrichment Program. Ironically, the recent IAEA report shows that Iran's nuclear program has in no way been affected by sanctions, since the Islamic Republic is still on track producing 5% and 20% enriched uranium for peaceful purposes. So why pursue these sanctions if they have failed in their primary objective, sir?
Well, from the U.S.'s point of view, they need to keep escalating the pressure so that they hope at some point Iran's resistance will diminish and they will buckle and basically capitulate to their demands. And so far, all the evidences point to the contrary, that Iran's nuclear program is advancing steadily within the framework of the Articles of Non-Proliferation Treaty and supervision of the IAEA, which has had numerous visits, some short inspection visits, to all the enrichment halls in Natanz as well as Fordow. And in these various IAEA reports, there are very clear statements that there's no evidence of diversion of declared nuclear material. And there's no evidence whatsoever of any undeclared nuclear material. And the IAEA's other statement that is unable to verify the latter, in fact, is beyond their mandate, beyond their safeguard agreement with Iran, which is very clear that their role is to do basic nuclear accountancy, nothing more. But for various political reasons that are beyond the scope of this interview, the IAEA has been politicized and has assumed this additional responsibility, much to the chagrin of many member states, particularly those that are members of the Non-Aligned Movement. And the Non-Aligned Movement, in its various communiques at the IAEA and so forth, has objected to these extra legal demands that the IAEA has imposed on Iran or tried to force Iran to respond to. Nevertheless, Iran has shown good faith, and this last meeting in Tehran with the seven-man delegation of IAEA headed by the Deputy Director for Safeguards apparently was very successful, and we are now on the verge of inking an important modality for cooperation between Iran and the IAEA to address the various issues of concern by the agency. And a core issue is the request for visiting the Parchin military complex, a site that they have visited twice in 2005, various buildings, five buildings initially in January and some four or five in November 2005, without finding anything unusual or suspicion. And they took environmental sampling, and the IAEA report in February of 2006 confirmed that these sites at Parchin have shown nothing suspicious. So for whatever reason, the IAEA, after the successful conclusion of the work plan with Iran that addressed all the outstanding six questions of concern, came up with these questions about so-called alleged studies, even though it has admitted that he has no credible information about any of those alleged studies. And Iran has responded with a 117-page response that shows the forged nature of a lot of these documents, and some of them are actually laughable, because a top secret document, for example, and underneath of it it says sent to the library. And of course, no top secret document would be sent to a public library, would it? Nevertheless, Iran, I think, has taken proactive steps, and now we are about to see, you know, a signing of a modality that would resolve, from Iran's point of view, all these issues of concern. And the work plan that I mentioned had stipulated that after its completion, Iran's nuclear dossier would be treated as routine. And that didn't happen. And now Iran's expectation, of course, is that once we have this structured approach, and once the IAEA goes to these sites and finds nothing suspicious, then we really want the IAEA to normalize Iran's nuclear file. And if that happens, that would be a giant leap forward toward getting the Iranian file out of the hands of the UN Security Council that has usurped IAEA's jurisdiction and has gone beyond its own mandate, for example, by calling on Iran to adopt the voluntary additional protocol. It's not a binding protocol, it's a voluntary. Some 70 nations have not ratified it. And yet the Security Council calls on Iran to adopt it. Commands Iran, basically. And that's illegal, and any legal international law expert can readily admit to that. And the list goes on. But I think that right now we are at a very critical threshold. When the Iran-IAEA cooperation is advancing forward, the 5+1 nations have so far failed to set up a time for a follow-up meeting. They're probably waiting to see what's going to happen in mid-January between Iran and the IAEA. And there's division among them. And the Obama administration has yet to articulate its new policy toward Iran in its second administration, because its first try at engagement was a complete failure because it was totally half-hearted and inconsistent. And we need to see a more energetic and constructive approach by the second Obama administration in order to see a fruitful engagement with Iran in the months and the years to come.
Thank you, Kaveh Afrasiab in Boston. Professor Izadi, earlier you mentioned that the U.S. in particular, the West, the U.S. in particular, have clearly gone back on the rhetoric, the so-called freedom of speech, that what they have been preaching for years, free flow of information, freedom of expression, by not even tolerating the Iranian media outlets with their smaller reach as compared to their own media. How does this reflect on their own citizens, on the people in the West? You did mention that the world public opinion is becoming more and more important. Why are they prepared to pay such a high price for this, that all their what they've been preaching has been proven to be futile and baseless?
Well, actually, they're not paying that high of a price because they censor the news of their censorship. Mm-hmm. They really, after these bans were implemented, you really did not see major Western news outlets covering the story fully, and did not talk about it, did not discuss it. They basically wanted to avoid covering mm-hmm. what they have done. Why? Because they are obviously not very, they cannot really defend their action in this regard. But I think even, given the fact that they have not covered this issue properly, they are people in their countries, in Western countries, and also in other parts of the world that do realize what's going on. And they actually become more interested to hear what the Iranian side is talking about. Mm-hmm. Generally, when you restrict something, people become more interested in it. This is, I think, it's happening with regard to this particular case. I think what the Iranian media outlets need to do is basically go into outlets that are harder to block. For example, being able to have a better presence in the internet, mm-hmm. Having some of the shows that are blocked, being presented in the internet is a way of basically going around this type of restrictions, illegal and unjustified restrictions that they have. I think the viewers also need to have a responsibility, the sort of regular viewers, to share what they see and the sources that they have with others that may not be familiar with these issues.
On Facebook, Twitter, etc.
And when you go to these social media outlets, you will see many individuals without worrying about their time or without worrying about the efforts that they put in on voluntary basis, do a lot of these things. The other side has a front, has a media front, has a propaganda front that is working and is trying to influence public opinion. This side also needs to develop a front. There are things that people inside Iran can and should do, and there are things that people outside need to do to make sure that this pressure from outside is not really successful.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Izzadi. Before I put the next question to Professor Afrosiabi regarding Iran and the next round of talks with the P5+1, we're going to take a short break. Stay with us. Welcome back to Spectrum Iran. In tonight's show, we're focusing on the recent set of U.S. sanctions against the Islamic Republic of Iran. And we've got two guests, one in Boston and the other in our Tehran studio. Professor Afrosiabi in Boston, sir. Earlier, you told our viewers about the Iran-IAEA talks advancing forward and hopefully signing a modality soon. Any hope that positive atmosphere would favorably affect the next round of talks between Tehran and the P5+1, sir?
Absolutely, and I think that those who try to deny that, just as the assistant to Lady Ashton did at the, I believe, Moscow talk, or was it Baghdad talk, simply doesn't wash. Iran has a safeguard agreement with the IAEA. This is a nuclear standoff. And if the IAEA gives Iran a clean bill of health, as it's called, then the multilateral parties, the Iran six nations, have to take that into consideration and factor it in terms of their packages to Iran for, some sort of a formula to resolve the nuclear standoff. I hasten to add that the UN Resolution 1696, Item 4, imposes a double obligation, sort of an interdependent obligation, for, on the one hand, Iran to comply with certain demands, such as suspension of enrichment and reprocessing activities, and on the other parties to enter into good faith negotiation respecting their packages. Unfortunately, we have seen signs of bad faith negotiation on the part of some of these Western nations. Case in point, at the Baghdad meeting, when Iran showed signs of conciliation and flexibility with respect to the 20% enrichment, there was no quid pro quo on the other side and no signs of willingness to make any kind of compromises. And it certainly backfired in the public opinion, because we had, for example, the International Crisis Group issuing a report with a scathing criticism of the inflexible and rigid approach of the Western governments involved in negotiation with Iran. And I think that in terms of the context of the coming negotiations, Iran has some leverages, because it has been pragmatic, flexible, and has shown signs of good faith. And we have not seen a mirror image of that on the part of the U.S., England, and France, the three principal Western states involved in these negotiations. And these are, of course, led by the United States, that has had contradictory approach toward Iran, because we've seen official statements reported in the New York Times, for example, that says, okay, we recognize Iran's legitimate NPT right to possessing a nuclear fuel cycle, and yet when they come to the negotiation table, you know, they say something whispering to the Iranian official, and then they go public and say something quite opposite. And that doesn't work. The U.S. has to have a consistent approach within the framework of the NPT, just as they agreed at the initial Istanbul meeting earlier this year. So, you know, there has to be a structured approach, not just with the IAEA, as it's about to happen in January, but also with the Iran Six Nations. And unfortunately, that has not happened yet. And we see, you know, a whole set of arbitrary demands and so forth that is hurled at Iran. For example, you know, this whole idea that, okay, you know, we're willing to let go of the restrictions on the sale of civilian airplane spare parts to Iran if you do X, Y, and Z. You know, if you look at the framework of the UN sanction resolutions on Iran, they are very specific. Not that I support those resolutions. Nevertheless, you know, if we're with, you know, if you're talking about, you know, complying with international law and international norms, I think that these Western governments are guilty of ignoring and avoiding those norms and principles. And that is why I think that we need to have a parallel, a structured approach for the 5+1 nations dialogue and negotiation with Iran in the near future.
Thank you, Dr. Afrosiabi. Fuad Yazdi earlier said, earlier you talked of these punitive sanctions without any legal justification being exerted on the Iranian nation and the government in order to force the officials change their ways, which they haven't. They've been standing their ground, and they insist on their inalienable rights in every field. But the Iranian population has been targeted. We're witnessing thousands, hundreds of thousands of people who are seriously ill, having difficulty getting, for example, anti-cancer drugs, and they're being made to suffer. So there seems to be a hypocrisy. It's not the government which is being targeted in reality. It's the ordinary Iranians. Is that not the case?
Well, you have heard from Western governments talking about how concerned they are about the Iranian people, how much they value human rights in Iran. Every now and then they give a prize to someone on the issue of human rights. But if they were really interested in the human rights situation in Iran, they would not cut things like medicine from the most vulnerable segments of society, which are the sick people. And they have done that. They have exactly done that. In terms of other things that are necessary for a society, you see these sanctions are causing problem for ordinary people. When you sanction gasoline, for example, who's using gasoline? Ordinary people that are living their lives. The aim of these sanctions, obviously, is to pressure Iranian people so they repent from, first of all, having a revolution here, and then secondly, voting for people who are interested in country's freedom and independence. They really don't like Iranian people doing that. And similar to what they have done in Palestine, in Gaza, which voted for Hamas, and then they were in a democratic election, and then they were punished for voting for the wrong people in the eyes of Western governments. They are doing the same thing in Iran. They basically don't respect human rights. They really don't like democracy, because when in a true democracy, people who are interested in independence of the country and are interested in the freedom of their people actually win. And they really don't like these people because their objectives and goals are not do not match the objectives and goals of these Western governments, and they don't like that. So when next time you hear some European official or the U.S. president or secretary of state talk about human rights, I think your viewers should remember how they are actually dealing with the Iranian people and how they are punishing ordinary citizens.
Thank you. Professor Izzat, Professor Afrasiabi, in addition to imposing sanctions against Iran, the West seems to be determined to block Iran's ability to communicate with the people of the world, especially the ones in Europe and US, at a time when two-way communication is indispensable. Why is that the case, sir? In less than three minutes, sir, Khaled Afrasiabi.
Well, I think that this is part of the whole comprehensive approach of, you know, coercive approach that seeks to block Iran's access to the international media so that they would have the monopoly of say on the nuclear and other affairs pertaining to Iran. And this goes really directly against the very grain of political pluralism and democracy in the West. And they want to have a monological approach that dictates their understanding of what is going on to the world public opinion and deprive the latter of having, you know, access to the other side's point of view. And of course, you know, that is a giant step backward to medieval times, and many people in the world are trying to abide by that. Fortunately, all these coercive efforts have come to naught so far, and Iran has resisted, as well as many nations that support Iran, including those of the non-aligned movement that had their summits in Tehran and issued the communication in support of Iran's nuclear rights and its peaceful nuclear activities. So I think that both, you know, at the international organizations, as well as in terms of the world media, the opponents of Iran don't necessarily have a monopoly of say. And Iran has its own outlets, such as Press TV and Sahar TV and so forth, that it can reflect its point of view and get its message out to the audience out there.
Thank you. Well, with those comments by Professor Khaled Afrasiabi, we've come to the end of this edition of Spectrum Iran. Special thanks to both our guests for their time and insight. We had the pleasure of being joined via satellite in Boston, USA, by Professor Khaled Afrasiabi, author, political expert, and scientist. Professor Afrasiabi, it was a pleasure to have you join our program, sir. Thank you for your participation.
Thank you so much. Thank you for inviting me.
It's a pleasure. And in our Tehran studio, we also had the pleasure of being joined by Dr. Fuad Izzadi, Professor of Political Communications at the University of Tehran. Dr. Izzadi, it was a pleasure to have you join our program as well, sir. Thank you
for having me.
It was a pleasure. And that's a wrap for this edition of Spectrum Iran. Thanks to our viewers for staying tuned. If you'd like to make any comments or suggestions, please do so by emailing us at iran@saartv.ir. And that's a wrap. Good night and God bless. See you same time, same next week. Bye-bye. Thank you.